Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics Podcast. The Nationals did really well at the federal election, picking up an extra seat. But in New South Wales, the recent Orange by-election has been a disaster for them. They've lost a seat traditionally in their firm possession. Although the issues were mostly state ones, the effect has been to galvanise the Nationals and their federal leader, Barnaby Joyce, who's Deputy Prime Minister. Joyce has said that these days no seat can be regarded as safe. The Nationals are also now deeply worried about the Queensland election, which is due by 2018, where One Nation will be a threat to both sides of politics. To discuss these and other issues, we're joined today by Barnaby Joyce. Barnaby Joyce, you said this week that the Nationals trouncing in the Orange by-election, which has been lost to the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party, is a wake-up call for your party. Leaving aside the state factors, what are the lessons for the federal Nationals from that contest?
Well, the first thing I would say, of course, is that every booth that voted against us in the Orange by-election 4 months prior to that voted for us at the federal election. So there is the capacity, and it is a lesson for people to differentiate between federal and state issues. Obviously, everybody's heard about the Greyhound issue, and they've also heard about the council amalgamation issue. So the lessons you take from that is, one, that don't think it's politically incorrect to state the bleeding obvious in a debate, and that if you avoid it, the only person who will pay for it is you. The other thing that is to be well noted in this is that a party, the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party, comes from nowhere and wins a seat with a massive swing. What this would have been overwhelmingly regarded as a so-called safe seat. So there's a salient lesson there that don't ever think you're in a safe seat. The moment you think you're safe is the moment your opposition will have the capacity to remove you. And the other message, of course, from this is that the sort of combinations and permutations of Machiavellianism is abounding in politics. And when you have the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party preferencing the Labor Party and Labor Party preferencing them, you know that any combination is possible if the purpose is to remove you. So don't ever think that there's so-called natural allies.
Now, talking federally, in the election campaign, the Nationals essentially ran their own race at a local level. Do you think that the Nationals need to differentiate themselves more from the Liberals?
Well, I think we do. I think people clearly understand there's a difference between the National Party and the Liberal Party. They both recognise the qualities in both. If there wasn't a reason to differentiate, then you'd amalgamate. And so I'm very... I always have been parochially national, and in debates at the start when I first came into politics back in 2005 when we got down to 12 members and senators, I think, there was always this, oh, we should just fold the show up, and I fought as hard as I could with others to make sure that that didn't happen. And of course, we've since that point in time turned it around and had real success at a federal level. We have our strong views on a range of issues, and you can see them. Whether they're more inclined to regional development, they're more inclined to the security of towns. They're probably as not as focused on other issues, which are sort of issue de jure in a city market. I'll give you an example. There might be a, for instance, I'll give you a classic one: tree clearing. People in the city might say, "Oh, well, that's good. You've got to protect all the trees." Except they're the trees out in the country, and they're actually our property, and you can't just go into someone's place and take their property. Now, this opens up arguments with all sorts of colleagues because they think, oh, well, you've got to protect the environment, where in the country we say, protect the environment, but you don't pay the price. We do. We also believe in protecting the environment, but we also believe in protecting the rights of the mums and dads in little regional towns to survive. And that's also important to us.
But to many farmers, the environment is pretty central in the long term because land is degraded, they lose money.
I understand that. But the thing is, that's done by the logic of the people on the farm, not by the dictum of a centralised government. I mean, if you start believing that someone in an office has a better idea of how to run your farm than you on the farm, then the whole thing is lost. If you start believing that people are inherently stupid on the land and need a government to step in and regulate them within an inch of their life, then you won't have people on the land. And my goal, and we fought these fights all the way through. I remember at the start when they initially closed down the live cattle trade, we had a lot of people on our own side saying, oh, that's great, we need to close down the live cattle trade. I said, no, that's outrageous. That's going to send people broke. We had it, I had a different position to the state guys on the greyhound issue, because I said, look, mate, you can't close down an industry because you're going into people's lives, you're telling them how to live. It's just not right, and they'll punish you for it. And of course they did.
Now, some Liberals are becoming fairly preoccupied with fairly specialist issues, particularly, for example, the future of 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act. What do you find in the bush? Do people care about that sort of issue?
Look, all these issues, it might be something that's brought up in the political game, as you know, Michelle, the people who go to branch meetings are a lot more immersed in the sort of the culture of politics.
I'm talking about people you meet at the pub in Tamworth.
They wouldn't even understand what it is. They wouldn't understand, nor would they care. And so, the issue is there are a specific there's a set of people who are more intensely involved in politics. Now, they might be concerned, but if you think I go past the guys working on the road and as I say good day to them and ask them how the job's going, they will say, I really want to talk to you about 18C. No, they don't. They want to talk about what other roads are going to seal, when we're going to build some dams, how we're doing running out mobile phone towers, are we looking after the cockies, is the price of their cattle staying up, what are you going to do for my town, health, are you going to get some sport facilities into my town? Are you going to build inland? These are the inland rail. These are the things that interest them. They are interested in the things you can touch. They do not occupy themselves in the deeper philosophical thoughts, which, to be honest, in the fourth estate down here, everyone will run around and scratch their head and talk about. And if they don't want to talk about 18C, they'll talk about the marriage, equality debate. And that's marvellous in Canberra. And it's marvellous in the party meeting, where people go into different corners of the room and fight out the issues. But of course, what we've got to be really careful of is once you leave the party room meeting, whether it's here or whether it's your branch meeting back in the country, don't think that that's the issue that's going to get people across the pub on a Friday night, because it's not. It's just not an issue.
Now, a couple of your backbenchers this week in the Senate crossed the floor to try to lift the ban on the import of the Adler shotgun.
Seven shot.
And three of your cabinet ministers didn't vote. The government's policy is to support that ban. What were you telling your senior people?
Well, obviously, as a person who's crossed the floor 28 times myself, I've set a fine example of people having their right. People know that if you cross the floor, that is, you actually exercise your right and express your vote opposite to the government, that it comes at a price.
Cabinet ministers, though, abstaining is another
But that's matter. It's what they call, so your listeners know, a Mickey was for Mickey Mouse, which means basically the Greens have come up with a motion which is only specific to the Greens, or one of the crossbenchers have come up for a motion which the Labor and the Coalition don't support, and ministers don't have to go to that vote. Now, I'll give you some Labor Party ministers who weren't at that vote as well. There was Kim Carr. Now, someone telling me that Kim Carr from Victorian left of the Labor Party is a member of the National Rifle Association because he didn't go to the vote. I mean, and then Don Farrell, he's their whip. He didn't go.
So I think that's a debating point, though, because
really.
In the case of your ministers, they were expressing an opinion.
Well,
we know that.
Well, the issue is that you don't have to. This is the rule. If you are a minister, you do not have to go to Mickey Mouse divisions, which is where the Coalition and the Labor Party have the same position. Therefore, there's overwhelming numbers on one side of the way. You do not have to go. That is your right. And they express their right by not turning up.
What's
that
your
is
feeling
right.
on the ban?
My feeling is that I support the position of cabinet. I don't own a gun, Michelle, and I don't have a shooter's license. I do have a property, and I was involved with our defence force, so I've got every reason to own one. I just don't. But this thing is not. It's not something that really bends me out of shape. I've got no problems with people go shooting. I've got a shooting range just around the corner from me. No problems at all. People are involved in guns, are passionately involved with them. It's almost like a sort of a quasi-religion for them. For them, it's, and Bridget is part of that, Bridget McKenzie. And I respect her right. For
You've
her,
never been for a her, recreational shooter?
Oh, you know, yeah, I've shot for work. I mean, we go out, we have to shoot, you know, we'd be shooting rabbits, you'd get permits, or before permits, we'd be shooting roos to try and take the pressure off your country. You know, you shoot other vermin, pigs, you know, but I never saw it. When you say recreational, for me, a rifle was a tool of trade. It was what I used to do a job. If a beast is down and it can't get up, what are you going to try and cut its throat? You're just going to stare at it and let it die over days. Now, you've got to go out and, as my father was a vet, put it down. You work out, how do you do that? What's the most effective way to do that? With a rifle. And that's what when you're on the land, it's a more robust life. And these things are, you know, part and parcel of what you do. And there's nothing worse than seeing, you know, a horse down or a beast down and just, you know, it's going to die. Your job is to put it out of its misery as quickly as possible.
Let's turn to the effect of One Nation. They did very well at the federal election. Now, you're a former Queensland senator. You've got detailed knowledge of that state. How much of a worry for the LNP is the Pauline Hanson threat?
Look, I think this is it's a global thing, and it's everywhere. See, what you've done is you've developed the world, the age of Facebook, the age of Instagram, the age of Snapchat, the age of Twitter. You've taken the political message down to little sound bites, and because it's down to little sound bites, you've brought more volatility into how the political message gets out. Therefore, you have Brexit. Therefore, you have, you know, it works. You've had an election campaign in the United States that went against how people, you know, all the pundits, all the pollsters, without, you know, drawing any sort of value into, you know, making a value judgment. It's just completely changed things around. You've seen it in that an area such as Orange, you get, you know, 34% swing to the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party. And you, like, for all intents, first time they've ever had a lower house seat from nowhere. Okay, you've got Marie Le Pen in France, who looks like she's going to probably the president of France. So you know, there is a. It's not just something that I think is peculiar to Australia. I think the consumption of the political message has gone from the broadsheet, has gone from people sitting back and watching the news and the current affairs programs, to people talking to their friends on Facebook and getting sound bit messages. And so this I think has a capacity in some instances to polarize, but you got to remember, why does it polarize? Because in those messages are things that matter to people, messages that they that matter, that resonate. People wouldn't just change because they got a giggle. They change because they get a message and go, yeah, that's all I needed to know, and that's enough for me to change my vote. And that's what's happening now. And we've got to compete in that space, as well as stop thinking that, you know, the grand architecture of the orchestrated plan from central office with a whole, you know, 51 shiny ass people running around talking about the colour blue is going to win you an election. It won't. Nothing is going to win you an election like footwork, like getting out and getting around your pubs. When as I always say, because it sounds all hokey, but it's true. When the CWA put on the art show at the Nundle Hall, get there and talk to them, because they might be someone's grandmothers, but they're probably the grandmother to 10 or 15 voters. And so you better be on the right side of them if you want them to tell their kids and their grandkids what a wonderful fellow you are and should be supported at the next election. You know, get round. Don't think there's something stupid about getting into your corners of your electorate. It's the people who always feel left out that probably have the strongest volatility in how they vote. And I remember I saw with the strongest election, I'm carrying on a bit, but the strongest election for the coalition at the last federal election was in my electorate. It's a place called Nowondog. I got 97% of the primary vote in a booth. And people said, how would that happen? I said, because I go there, mate. Because I go there and even I go to the, and I sit on the step of the local store with a trolley and talk to people. I go to there when they have a tennis day, you know, turn up. I don't play tennis, but just this is politics 101. But if you want to get around Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, everything else, turn up.
So just specifically on Queensland, do you think that Hanson is a big threat to the LNP at the coming election? She's obviously a threat to the Labor government too.
What I think is a big threat is that the volatility is a threat. And there are mechanisms out there to harvest volatility. And one is One Nation, the other one's the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party, and you'll find them on the left as well. They harvest volatility. In some instances, in their wild iterations, the Greens, they harvested volatility. We'd track people. Some people would, in previous elections, would switch from the Greens, in one instance, to the Palmer United Party. I mean, the message there is volatility. But volatility now in the past it was a small group, now it's a bigger and bigger and bigger group. And so you better be aware that it's there, I think they're voting for One Nation, or I think they're voting for the Shooters and Fishers Party, that you got to pull yourself up and say, no, they just might be voting against us.
Now, Attorney General George Brandis was caught on film in the last few days saying that the LNP opposition in Queensland was very, very mediocre. Do you think they need to lift their game?
I think the LNP are doing... Look, people got to understand the genesis of this. We had the National Party and the Liberal Party, and they were both wonderful parties. The only problem they had is they couldn't win an election, and that sort of makes the purpose of politics pointless. I mean, what is the point of sitting in opposition for, I don't know what they got up to. They've got close to two decades in opposition. And something's got to happen. I mean, it doesn't matter what. You've got to swallow your pride and light a candle to logic and say, how do we fix this up? And so in Queensland, they created the LNP, and its first iteration, overwhelmingly successful, blitzed it. And then, unfortunately, for whatever reason, I think, I won't gild the lily. Arrogance comes into play, and that's always the death knell of people on the Conservative side. On the left, it's incompetence.
We're talking about the Newman government.
Yeah, here. Arrogance comes into play, and people feel that you're out of touch, and volatility comes into play, and out the door you go. On the left hand side, on the Labor Party side, it's incompetence. Their biggest problem always is incompetence. They go to try and build an NBN, and the budget blows out. They try to stimulate the economy with, you know, ceiling insulation, and people die and houses catch on fire. It's always, for the Labor Party, it's always incompetence, and that's where their great trip point is. For us, it's when they sniff arrogance. So you got it. So once more, how do you get around that? Put your shoes on, start walking around, listen to what people are saying, bring it back to the party.
What do you think of the talk of possible demerger in Queensland?
No, that's not going to happen.
Not going to happen?
No. There's no point sort of, gilding it. It's not going to happen. You know why? Because the people who make that decision is not George or myself or anybody else. It's the membership, and that the membership would have to decide they want to do it. And I haven't heard any big swathes of members having meetings saying they want to demerge. And so it's not going to. And that's the reality is, parties, and they should be, are run by the members. If the members wanted to demerge, you'd hear it from the members.
Coming to some specific issues in your bailiwick, the battle for the Murray-Darling water is on again, with the water flow for the environment set to be reduced at the behest of New South Wales and Victoria. South Australia's upset. Nick Xenophon, key Senate crossbencher, is kicking up, and that feeds into the negotiations on various issues. Why do you think that the balance at the moment is wrong?
Well, I'm talking about exactly what's in... See, the art of politics is for someone to know exactly what you're doing, but to mischievously change it and say that you're doing something different. So when Tony Burke got out the other day and said, oh, Barnaby's throwing out the plan, I'm actually talking about the plan he wrote and the words that how he wrote it. And I can even, sitting here without it in front of me, I can tell you the section 17.2b, where it says that you can't get an extra 450 gigalitres if it has to be socially and economically equivalent for the towns that you take it from or improve their position. Now, I'm stating the bleeding obvious. We say, okay, that's a dilemma. How do you do that? It's like saying you can only eat the apple, but you can't take a bite of it. You say, well, how do you do that? You know, you say, now you can eat four apples, but you're not allowed to put your teeth in any of them. You say, well, this is not going to work. You know, and so when I sit down with people, I basically say, how do we work through this? And my fault, my greatest fault is I'm honest with people. So I write a letter to the South Australian minister, I ring him up, and then we had that absolute, some of the, you know, the craziness comes in because they all think, oh, I can politically play this. If I go out there and beat my chest and swear and run around and make a racket, then I'll win the, you know, it'll look great. It'll look politically great. You say, but that's great. But you haven't fixed the problem that I've got. The problem is, how are we going to do this?
Just in a nutshell, where is this situation at the moment?
Well, it just stands in this sort of stalemate where we say, well, we've got $1.77 billion on the table, 1.57 after we take out works and measures. You want 450 gigs. You have to show us how you can do it without hurting anybody and without affecting the economies that you're in. It's quite explicit in 17.2B in the legislation passed by Mr. Tony Burke when he was a Minister for Water. And so, and my dilemma is, it's still there. No one's got a solution. And all I'm trying to do, Michelle, is find a solution. Because I think one thing people don't like about politics is when you sort of run around the joint looking at a problem and never actually grab hold of it and try and fix it.
Well, talking about another problem, and just finally and briefly, where's the backpacker tax issue? And is something going to be resolved in these final 2 weeks of
Parliament? Well, I hope so. I mean, this is another one.
So where are we now?
Well, the Labor Party played a complete political bastardry on this. Like, they always used to complain about Abbott calling you Mr. No and all that stuff. Remember that? And then they've gone out and done it themselves. We had a negotiated settlement. We brought it from 32 down to 19 because everybody agreed with 19. And then Senator Jackie Lambie, and I didn't know that she was great mates with Bill Shorten or was her chief economic advisor, suggests 10.5, and he agrees to it. And he knows full well that we can't sell that because it's completely discriminatory against Australian workers, and costs us a bomb.
So what happens if there's no deal?
Well, you end up back at 32.5, and I don't want that. And so, you know, if Bill Shorten was a decent bloke, he would say, listen, we're going to pass the 19, get that out of the way, and then if the Labor Party policy is for a cheaper rate, we'll take that to the next election, but we're going to get this thing parked and dealt with and out of the way. But he's not doing that because he doesn't want a solution. He wants a fight. And who gets hurt by that? Regional people.
Well, lots of fruit growers will be hanging out for the outcome of the negotiations in the next week or so. Barnaby Joyce, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from the Conversations podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. We'll be back with you soon.